This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Welcome to the Saxo Market Call on this FOMC day, Wednesday, 16th of June, 2021. We finally got, Peter, a little bit of a pullback in equities in the U.S., although not a particular headline grabber, maybe just a bit interesting that it came after those record highs. And finally, maybe showing a little bit of respect for the risk event that is this FOMC meeting. Any take on the U.S. market before I think we switch over to what's more interesting, and that is the Chinese market?
Yes, exactly. So it was an interesting session because it was the first broad sell-off in U.S. equity growth pockets, as we call them, you know, biotechnologies, e-commerce, bubble stocks, etc. And it came off the recent, highs, as you say, and we have sort of almost erased all the gains from Monday's session. And that's very much opposite of what we're seeing in Europe, where we've actually had 8 straight sessions from a recent new all-time high, which is actually a new record we haven't seen that since 1999. So it really tells you that flows and sentiment is really on Europe right now and not so much in the US. But I think China, as you mentioned, that's the real story to focus on, because things are definitely brewing underneath the surface. You're going through the slides, actually. I should mention on slide 3, where you can see the long-term chart on our bubble basket. You can see that recent comeback we have had because of that very, very slight decline in U.S. Interest rate. It's not really much. You can see that.
Relative to the sell-off, it's exactly. Pretty modest stuff, yeah.
So my point is, and that before we go to China, I think the main point is here that the interest rate sensitivity is, I'm absolutely 100% sure about this, is really present, is there. It's just lurking underneath the surface, just ready to pop when we probably get on the other side of our FOMC or on the other side of the summer months.
Yeah, and the other side of all this stuff we've been talking endlessly about, the Treasury account and dollar liquidity situation that could be artificially suppressing Treasury rates. Let's go over to China, though. A session like last night, it deserves our attention, deserves some sort of poking around at what's going on here. So I think the technicals are really fascinating. First of all, the CSI 300, the marquee Chinese index, were pushing significantly lower, sort of erasing that whole episode above the prior resistance levels there. You can see on slide 4. And interestingly, clearly, this 200-day moving average has been very influential for support. And as well, that big line showing where the previous highs were around 4,885. So what's going on here? Well, we've been digging around a little bit, and we think we have at least one major culprit here. And that is this interesting situation. The sort of the background narrative is very interesting. Sort of this different, new Chinese stance on maybe allowing some corners of the overleveraged corporate market to default. This has been a new approach in recent months and even years. But there's some pretty big players here, and this is a very interesting story we've pulled out on slide 5.
Yeah, it's a story from Bloomberg. So we talked about Evergrande, which is the world's largest property developer. It came to the light of the Western world, I think, back in September, October. We talked about it back then. They were in problem. And then the largest shareholder of Suning Appliances basically wavered a 20 billion yuan payment for Evergrande, and that really alleviated a lot of the financing pressure on Evergrande. But now the pressure is back on, as you can see here on slide 5. We are looking at a dollar bond with expiration in 2022, so just around the corner, and it's yielding almost 30%, and you can see that very massive spike right there. And there are now also talks in the Bloomberg article that Suning Appliances is also running into some cash flow problems, and it is in a position where they need to sell shares. And it comes just after we had the news with Huarong, which is still a mess that is being cleaned up by the authorities.
Another big property company, developer company.
And asset management. I would say more financial type company, bank operations. But that mess is also being cleaned up. And you have this new, agenda by the state council in China that they want to clamp down on leverage in the private sector. So this is a story I think it will be with us for at least a year. It's not going away.
Just on the surface, one has to imagine something like Evergrande too big to fail, but certainly a story worth watching for a potential for unease in the Asian markets. All right, it's FOMC day, but before we get to that, there was an interesting data release out this morning, Althea, on fixed income, and finally UK, which was showing remarkably low CPI levels. We finally get a print this morning, so for the May cycle, where we get a pretty big upside surprise on this core reading at 2% versus only 1.5 expected. And this comes as gilt yields were going lower. So I assume this is not particularly supportive, I would hope, at least for if fundamentals mean anything anymore, particularly supportive for gilts here.
I think that John here, the main point is that the UK is going to have an inflation situation much different from anywhere elsewhere, just because Brexit can serve as a multiplier. The UK is an island and depends on imports for its economic activity. We have seen some relocation of migrants, so tightening the labor market, and everything points that inflation can be much worse in the UK, and we see that in these figures. So the rally we have seen recently in gilts, I think that is a little bit over itself. In slide number 6, you have 10 years yields, and you see that now they broke below their ascending trading channel, and they've tested support line at 0.70%. However, with in the inflation news out there, it looks like inflation is going to drive yields higher at a faster pace than any discussions about tapering.
Interesting stuff. And then on the currency front as well, so we got a bit of support for some lower inflation levels, and noting that import cost pressures with a decent rally post the Brexit reality coming to light in January 1, we had a 4% boost in the broad measures of sterling, and that has kind of flattened out in recent months. That could be an additional contributor there. And as you can see on slide 7, we're all just waiting for the FOMC here. Aussie been an impossibly constricted range. Let's see if the dam breaks. We'll talk a little bit more about FOMC preview later. For now, at least in terms of cost pressures, in terms of the commodity focus, Ola, we're sort of underlining the theme you've been talking about recently, this rise in the energy prices, whereas the metals markets are dealing with this very dramatic message from China.
Absolutely. And it basically translates into a continued rally in crude oil. It has become, as of right here on slide 8, the go-to commodity right now, with both metals and agriculturals running into a period here of correction. And it is the belief in the market that's basically a free put in there somewhere, because OPEC Plus, they hold the spare capacity right now. They will add barrels as they see fit. And that is into a market where demand clearly is now on the rise, because the virus threat is fading. And this is basically leaving the market once again to start speculating about how high can this market go. And I was listening into the FT's Global Commodity Forum yesterday and also today. And the three major, all the major oil traders, Trafigura, Glencore, Mercury, they're all talking about the possibility or the risk of crude oil returning to $100. And what they're saying is not because so much due to a surge in demand, but just simply because supply is potentially struggling to keep up, because we've seen all the changes during the past year here, with majors now focusing on ESG and decarbonization. I think Equinor yesterday was out saying that 50% of their capex going forward is going to be diverted towards alternatives. So that is leaving the market in a position where potentially we could see even higher prices. So here in the short term, we're focusing on the EIA report later today. There was another big drop reported by the API last night, and that gave the market an additional boost into today's trading. So that will be another focus today. And then you mentioned also the metal space, and again we're returning to China, because even though the belief in the future growth in demand is going to come from probably the Western world with electrification, which is for sure is going to take place and will add demand over the coming years, we are just facing a period here of consolidation and correction. So I'll call it short-term pain, but the long-term is still look very bright because of the boost from electrification. But adding to this, in the short term, we've seen this China's efforts since May to basically curb prices, and they continue to add initiatives. And overnight, there's another news that they're basically asking state companies to tell what kind of basically curb speculation in commodity markets outside of China. But also they announced the release of from state reserves of copper, zinc, and aluminium. So so the short-term outlook is one where where the market price may just be somewhat challenged.
Okay, and now heading back into the FOMC preview, we're all watching this for a couple of things. First of all, there's this very odd and one-off issue potentially of the interest on the interest rate the Fed will offer on excess reserves, whether this could be raised as slightly just to avoid this risk of that level going into negative because of excess liquidity. So it's a weird measure to take in terms of how does the market interpret it. I don't think it has really any particular effect on treasury yields or the dollar or market sentiment, but just watch how the Fed delivers that message and how they deliver any questions around this excess liquidity, as well as, of course, all the stuff we've been talking about. Is the Fed shifting its stance on whether inflation is transitory or not? Do they up the taper talk? Maybe mention the MBS purchases as especially the one that looks ridiculous relative to what the backdrop is and the U.S. housing market essentially on fire. And then, of course, the forecasts, both the PCE core forecast especially, but also the Fed rate forecasts in the so-called dot plot and whether those are shifted forward. We did see a shift in March. Still the median, not until 2024. I suspect we could see just enough of those dots shifting into a 2023 hike. But what's your take, I'll say, when you're looking at how treasury markets are trading ahead of this FOMC? What are you as a treasury trader looking for?
Well, I think that it's going to be very important to understand why we continue to see some pressure over U.S. Treasury yields and why last week we have seen the CPI, a very high CPI number and an yield dropped instead of rising. And the reason for that is that the front part of the yield curve is basically controlled by this excessive liquidity that there is in money markets, and on the long part of the yield curve, we are starting to see rotation from lower yielding government bonds to US treasuries. So the main take here is that if, like you said, if we see the median of the dot plots pushed forwards in 2023, and if we see the central bank revising PCE index estimates in 2022 and 2023, that could send a hawkish message. However, yields will not rise that much. If they rise, they will go back that trading channel they've been trading in for the past couple of months. And if they rise, they will find a cap at 1.70%. And that 1.70% level will be able to break only when the Federal Reserve will be actively engaging in tapering.
All right. Let's see what it brings. It's as I've sort of positioned it before, I think it's one of the last chances we might have for a while to get to avoid a even flatter and less interesting summer than this, what we've seen recently in markets. We could be in for some very, very quiet markets, at least until that August timeframe. But we'll see. Maybe we'll get something more than something that jolts the market a bit here. Looking at earnings, it's very thin. We've been talking about it that this week, though. A couple of interesting stories, though, Peter. This Lennar story, I guess, is the one in focus today, is the only one you have on the calendar.
Exactly. But just looking back at what happened last night, we had Oracle reporting Q4 earnings for their fiscal quarter that just ended. They don't follow the normal calendar year. And the stock was down 5% in extended trading. They actually beat expectations on revenue and profits for the fourth quarter, but the outlook for Q1 was below estimates. And as you can see here on the headline I grabbed from MarketWatch, the CEO is expecting to push more money into the cloud efforts because it was the cloud business. So in other words, as we talked about yesterday, Oracle seems to be this company that now for half a decade is unable to find a new avenue for growth. And the cloud push globally is really pressuring Oracle. And it seems like based on this headline, but also for what I've read in the earnings release, that they have trouble gaining momentum in that part of the technology stack or vector, if you want to call it that. Lennar is today's focus. They are expecting 18% growth on the revenue year on year. The quarter we're looking at here ended in late May, so that's actually quite fresh numbers from a company of a significant size. It's one of the largest home builders in the U.S. And I have this on slide 11. This time series over U.S. housing starts on an annualized basis, and you can see here we are at some of the levels that are some of the best we've seen since the years leading into the peak in 2006 before the great financial crisis. And we know there's a housing shortages in the US. Family formation is increasing in the US, and you know, the economic fundamentals are better in the US than they have been a long time. So the long-term outlook for Lennar is very, very positive. The key focus today will be on whether the recent gains that they have had in their operating margin, whether they can sustain that, because there is a significant rising input cost for home builders from the commodity side, as you would know, Ole. And the big question is, to what extent can they pass on these rising input costs, and to what extent are these higher prices a negative for the demand function of housing? And that is what I'll be looking at when we get the earnings result from Lennar.
Okay, and that takes us to the macro calendar. We should point out, besides economic data and central banks out meeting, we have a Biden-Putin summit today in Geneva. I saw one headline suggesting that this could go on for hours. This could be something a bit more comprehensive underway. Are U.S. and Russia trying to get off to a more productive, less confrontational trajectory? Very interesting. I think, of course, very interesting for the ruble, not least, as we look at what that summit produces. And then, of course, the FOMC meeting later today, and don't forget the Powell press conference shortly after that. Again, transitory or not is one of the key things, but all the other bits I mentioned on question marks around this FOMC meeting. Brazil, out a bit later, expected to hike rate 75 basis points. The Brazilian real has been on quite a comeback after being under such a significant pressure. And then a couple of interesting bits and pieces out in the Antipodes overnight. Q1 GDP out of New Zealand doesn't look terribly impressive to me, that expectation there. I think it is 0.5% quarter on quarter. And then Australia RBA is low to speak, and employment data out of Australia. Note the three central banks out tomorrow. We'll talk about that in tomorrow's Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter @SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.